to our first ever Rethinking Aloud podcasting conversation. These are conversations to stimulate reflection on how we as Christians react, respond, and understand what it means for us to be disciples and to be church at this time. I'm joined today by Bishop Martin Snow, Bishop of Leicester, Dr. Penny Pullen, a consultant in projects and leadership and management. She's also training to be a reader here in the diocese. And Kat Gibson, a pioneer minister working in intercultural pioneering contexts, again here in Leicester. So welcome to all of you. It's good to have you along. We're going to be thinking quite generally today. The hope is that these conversations stimulate your own conversations, perhaps in your church, your church's home groups or small groups, maybe in deanery chapters, parishes, fresh expressions of church, and so on. We're going to be thinking in this episode around what lessons we might be learning and where we might be seeing God at work in this time of coronavirus. Bishop Martin, can we start with you? What are you noticing at this time?
So the question, what are we noticing is a great question, familiar to a lot of people in the Diocese of Leicester, because it's a question we try and ask in all sorts of different contexts and different meetings and so on. And it's one that I'm asking at the moment as I go around visiting, virtually visiting different deaneries, trying to hear from other people. But I think for me at this moment in time, what I'm noticing above all is just simply the variety of responses to both to the pandemic itself and then also the lockdown that's been imposed. Obviously, within society, significant numbers of people who are mourning the loss of loved ones. There are those, obviously, who are ill in hospital and indeed those caring for them. Those very much on the front line who are facing the awful effects of this pandemic. But then, of course, those who are also on the front line in another sense in terms of facing the anxieties of this lockdown, whether that's through, the loss of their work, through their business struggling, through financial worries, in all sorts of ways, being affected very, very severely. But then I suppose the other side of it is, and it can feel slightly bizarre, all of this, and it's part of the very, very strange world we're now living in, is that I'm talking to other people who have not been touched by the pandemic itself. And for them, much more, it's the effects of the lockdown. And quite bizarrely, talking to some people who are quite enjoying it, who actually like the fact that life has slowed down, that they've been able to enjoy something of their just a different pace of life and so on. So a huge variety of responses, I think, is my real reflection on all of this, and that's going to be a challenge for us in the coming weeks and months, as we think about actually how, in any sense, are we united as a society.
That's really helpful and interesting, that kind of taking up the way that different people are responding differently. There isn't one kind of homogenous preset response that describes everyone's current experience. Penny or Kat, any further kind of initial thoughts or observations from either of you?
I find it really interesting how people are really tapping into that concept of lament that isn't normally talked about. I'm not sure I've ever heard a sermon preached on lament in churches, or maybe only once. And it's amazing how many people are talking about that at this point, saying, we are all at home in our different contexts, whatever that might look like. And recognizing that this is, no one's untouched by this. We're all suffering or struggling in some way. Well, maybe not everyone. I guess some people are enjoying it, like you say, Martin. But making space to lament. And people, something else I'm noticing is people asking the questions again of how to pray. People who've been Christians for decades and those that aren't at all are asking those big, big questions of what does it mean to talk to God? How do we do that at home? And that's been really interesting just to see that happen. And people, I suppose, recognizing that one's normal practice or normal rhythm of life doesn't seem right at this time. And so kind of rethinking how we engage with God and engage with one another in an unprecedented time like this.
Absolutely. And for me, I've been noticing my own reaction in many of these different things. I'm a member of an orchestra in Leicester, and three of the people in the orchestra have died already. So when an email comes in from my orchestra, it's, oh, yikes. Whereas I know in the church I go to, there hasn't been much impact as yet. So a lot of people can't really imagine what that's like. So, yeah, and also I normally race around the country and the world. I'm now at home and this whole slow thing. But as you say, the rhythm of life, what is the appropriate rhythm for these strange times?
I think there are, that's fascinating, isn't it? And I think there'll be interesting questions, and we'll touch on this later on, but interesting questions when we come out of the other side of all of this, whenever that might be, about what the appropriate kind of rhythms are then. And is there something of what we've experienced in this time which we'd want to hold on to despite all of the mess and the difficulty and everything? Is there something about a changed rhythm that we'll continue to kind of explore? So that's helpful. I'm just taking things in a slightly different direction. One of our key values as a diocese is creativity. We've seen a lot of online creativity, aware of churches live streaming or streaming, lots and lots of people in congregations rapidly upskilling on Zoom, lots of tech. I'm just wondering what's good about all of that kind of outpouring of creative energy and what some people are calling virtual church, but also are there any dangers inherent in kind of consuming church from your living room sofa? So the sort of the pluses and the minuses of that. I don't know if, Kat, do you want to say something about that? Any thoughts around that?
Yeah, sure. I love the, like you say, the creativity that people have been coming out with. It's been amazing to see how technology is used in different ways, how people are able to reinvent how they do church. It concerns me where church becomes, or I suppose you're asking about the dangers of this, where church can become a spectator sport. I don't think church was ever meant to be that, to be, you know, watching the vicar do their thing, a non-participatory, sit on your sofa, eat your Weetabix and watch church. I think that misses the point a little bit. That can be a bit of a danger of it. Because I feel church is really about coming together to worship God. And if we feel that the clergy and the other church leaders can kind of do that for us, as if the rest of the congregation can follow along without thinking, I think that can be, that can put us in a bit of a dangerous position. But I suppose that's, in a way, that's the way some services have got to, like, I think services always have a bit of an element of that. And I think that's really important. But I'm wondering, when we come back together physically, is it worth, I'm just thinking about what could change in our services to kind of co-create worship, and to value the contributions and the gifts of people that aren't being heard in lockdown. And then also during lockdown, just wondering what it might take to nurture the gifts of the people that aren't as tech savvy, aren't comfortable with Zoom or with broadcasting, the people that aren't engaging that kind of thing. How can their gifts be explored and nurtured and used both during this time and afterwards? And I'm wondering as well, I suppose there's definitely a place for watching a carefully cultivated service and to joining in with it from your living room or wherever. If people can't share fellowship and talk through joys and struggles together and encourage each other and, like I say, lament together and be heard whatever they're going through, then what is church as a community? So it is encouraging that there are so many ways of doing that and that churches are coming up with creative ways to do that. My concern is for the people that sort of fall off the edge of that and don't feel able to engage in that. Just wondering how we can kind of connect in with those people and what that might look like.
Yeah, absolutely. It's interesting, actually. I'm in a strange position of having had a long time to think about virtual, because it's not new for me. I've been doing this now for 18 and a half years. For me, it was 9/11 that sent me to suddenly have to do virtual. And I even wrote a book about it, about virtual leadership. So what I see here is there are almost two ends of a spectrum. At one end, there is sort of imperfect connection. And at the other end, there's beautifully produced broadcasts. And what I see in businesses is often that there are people who want to be in command and in control, having everything controlled very tightly at the center, aiming for perfection, I can see a bit of that going on in some churches, almost a fear of failure, everything having to be perfect and tightly controlled by a small number of people. At the other end, as I see in business, I see something that I think works better virtually, which is where you have, instead of trying to be in control, you facilitate everyone to do the best they can. And then you end up with community, you end up with connection, communication, and so on. It may be imperfect. You probably have to learn fast, which means failing fast and moving on. So I'm seeing, you know, some churches that have maybe a complete mess, but people are involved. They've got lots of people contributing. They've got things where perhaps everybody speaks at the same time over each other, but they're praying together, where things aren't beautifully tight all the time technically, but yet everybody's in there having a go. And I think perhaps that, as I found in business, perhaps aiming for connection and community is really the way to go.
I had a lovely example of that, Penny, just last night, meeting with the Bishop's Youth Council on Zoom. And it was being chaired by one of the young people. He did a brilliant job. But, of course, partway through, his computer failed on him and he just suddenly disappeared off the call. And it was just a lovely moment, basically, where everyone else had to sort of rally around and sort of decide, OK, what are we going to do now? but actually, yeah, it was a lovely sense of people connecting. And I found it very valuable being part of that meeting and hearing what young people are thinking about what's going on at the moment.
So engaging a community, however imperfect, it generates that connection. So at the reader service a couple of weeks ago, I heard about a village church who their catering team are making bags of homemade cookies for neighbours with a little note saying how they can pray for people. I just loved that. Perhaps we're all being given the chance to be pioneers.
I mean, I think, I guess some of that pull that some churches feel towards perfectionism and we need to, particularly online, put out a good product, in inverted commas, is perhaps a response to a consumerist attitude to church. And I wonder if this current moment almost encourages that. You know, you've got a whole range. You can sit down in your pajamas on a Sunday morning with a cup of coffee and a croissant, and you can be in any church anywhere across the United Kingdom or even the world. You've got that choice. And I'm quite interested in perhaps exploring some of this church stuff and the need to get the balance right between what can sometimes be almost a rampant individualism and the communitarian nature of what church should be. And we've got a God who deals with and who values and relates to and saves us all on a personal level. And that's absolutely wonderful. But we've got a God also who puts us intentionally in church families. And if you look through scripture, God who puts a high premium on the church as community, as the people of God. And I wonder what that balance looks like when church is being done well. And that's a much bigger question than just one that applies in this coronavirus season. But that kind of tension between the individual, the individual believer and the community of believers. I don't know, Bishop Martin, if you've got any thoughts on that tension.
Well, I do think Penny's point just a minute ago about different ways of connecting. So the fact that through this sort of virtual world that we're having to explore at the moment, we're discovering different ways of connecting. I think there's something really significant in that. So on the one hand, you're right, John, to highlight the we live in a very individualistic society, rampant consumerism, as you say. There are all sorts of dangers, yes, in people just observing and not really participating. But actually, I do think we need to be open to a new way of connecting. At the heart of the church in the New Testament, the heart of the work, say, of St. Paul, was, I think, very much about trying to bring people together across the divides of society. And, a lot of the writings, particularly of St. Paul, as I say, are about, how Jesus has broken down the divides of society, brought people of all sorts of different backgrounds together into a new community. And this new community is called the church, and it's intended to be a foretaste of the kingdom of God or of heaven. Now, obviously, he was writing at a time when they were having to explore how to do that. You know, we have some idea of how they were doing it in terms of house churches and these sorts of things, but we don't know much about it. And different ages all through church history have had to rethink that for themselves. And it has happened in different ways, in different societies, different parts of the world, different points in history. So I think that's a little bit what we're doing at the moment. It's thinking creatively about how do we connect people from very different backgrounds, and how do we show the reconciling work of Jesus Christ in the way we express community now. So, yeah, we need to be alert to the dangers, but we also need to be alert to the opportunities.
I think that's huge. And I think, although this, some people have been saying this time is an equalizer, I'm not sure it is. I don't think I agree with that. But the concept of having to, well, all of us as church communities have got to rethink the way we do church in some way, which is quite exciting, I think, as well as all the challenges of that. I think much of the value in church as a worshiping community is around knowing that we're in it together, that we have a shared, we each have personal relationship with God, and that relationship is shared, and that we're all journeying with him as individuals and as one body, and we all have slightly different journeys to one another, across different traditions, across age groups, across cultures, denominations, and all of that. And so I love that. I think I was saying earlier, I love that during lockdown, it is an opportunity for everyone to say, how do I pray? And to maybe try a different tradition, try a different way of engaging with God, that maybe helps us connect with one another across some of those divides that you mentioned. I think it's exciting because it covers both elements of the purpose of church, that personal faith journey, individual relationship with God, along with that communal journey of fellowship, sharing that with one another, talking together about who God is to us and supporting one another in that. I think that's huge and a massive opportunity of this time that we wouldn't necessarily have otherwise explored together had it not been for lockdown.
Yeah, and I think that'd be a really good one to return to on a future week and perhaps do a whole podcast on church and community. And I always love the way that the nature of God, the Trinity, almost in who God is, in that relationship he has within himself, kind of says something about the importance of community. Think of God's observation in the Genesis story that it's not good for the man to be alone. So maybe we'll come back and think about the individual and the church as family and community on a future podcast. But changing the focus again slightly, Penny, you're involved obviously in a local church, but also you've got no doubt friends in other churches. You're training in the diocese, kind of plugged in therefore with Christians from different churches and that around the diocese. Where are you seeing God at work, do you think, in all of the, you know, the challenge, the sadness, the fear, the anxiety, all those things that we acknowledged at the beginning? But where do you think you're seeing God at work? You know, the obvious question, you know, where is God?
It's fascinating, isn't it? Because I think God is where God has always been. And perhaps part of the answer is actually this whole pandemic and the whole situation means that we're probably closer to many of the Christians of the past than we've ever been. So reading some bits of the Bible, it makes so much more sense. You know, pestilence and so on, I've always read and thought, "Bah." So that connection back to the past. But also I've seen some churches, people are getting to know each other better than they actually did when they were face-to-face. So let's not just say, oh, well, when we're in the building together, that's the best. I was talking to a friend who was telling me all about how people in her church are opening up. They're interviewing different people each week about what's happening, what's their experience. And she says she's found out things about people she's been in church with for 20 years and really didn't know very well at all. I suppose the other thing is there is lament, and actually so often in modern churches we sort of gloss over those bits, so actually maybe we're just going deeper into that, and that probably is perhaps a little bit more real. But where's God? God is where God has always been, is my experience. And perhaps it's a chance for us to explore, not just do the things that we've always done, use the crutches we've always used.
Yeah, I love that. God is where he's always been. And maybe it's about us actually realizing the full extent of what his omnipresence looks like. That's great. Just wonder, Bishop Martin, with your obviously very diocesan, your sort of diocese-wide view, what you might be noticing in terms of perhaps where are you seeing glimpses of glory and where do you think that we as a church are being challenged? What should we be paying attention to?
Well, I think there is such a mix, isn't there, at the moment, and it's hard to really answer that question in terms of where is God in all of this. I do see just lots of glimpses here and there, I suppose, but I think it's going to take a long time to really work out what's going on in the midst of all of this. So, I mean, on the one hand, I see something of the church being taken back to its core, if you like, really. So being able to explore in much greater depth prayer and worship and what it really means to engage with God. Being able to express genuine care for one another. I've seen lots of expressions of that in different ways. Even just the whether it's the vicar or a lay leader in a church phoning, somebody they know is quite isolated and living on their own or whatever it may be. And that phone call just making a huge difference. And that somehow just seems to have come back to the core of what we're doing in our churches again, which I just think is great. And I do see something of God in that. But at the same time, I suppose, as I think Kat commented earlier, this sort of trite phrase, we're all in this together, I'm not sure is right. The reality is this is hitting certain communities and certain people much harder than others. And in particular, it is some of our more economically deprived communities. And that's true here in Leicester, but very particularly true around the world as well. Places where actually they can't just lock down in the way that we are doing at the moment. That means people living in great fear and real anxiety. So there is a real challenge to us as well within us in the church in terms of not just how we care for those within our own local church, I suppose, but how we look wider and look to those who are particularly vulnerable or particularly at need within our society and around the world.
Yeah, that's really really helpful to be thinking about some of those things. I'm wondering as well about opportunities. Statistics and some of the studies that have been done recently seem to suggest that more people are tuning into church services online than would have visited a church on a Sunday. The Google search for the word prayer has kind of just exponentially zoomed up in terms of the number of people looking for that. What sort of opportunities do we see at the moment, do you think, of actually talking about faith and God and Jesus with those who perhaps are just asking questions that have been at the back of their minds for a long time? Is it a season of opportunity as well?
Well, I think that's an interesting question, John. There is definitely something going on, isn't there, within our society around people having questions, people searching. And interestingly, turning again to the church to want to explore some of those questions. Now, that's not universal, obviously not everybody, but significant numbers, as you say. And one of the questions for us as a church is how are we going to respond to that? And I think one of my great hopes within that would be not only, of course, that we'd respond compassionately and with sensitivity, but also that we wouldn't, be throwing out the sort of trite answers. The reality of this is that people are suffering in a very, very deep and real way. And we don't have, you know, easy answers to that at all. I'm afraid I'm always suspicious of anyone who says that they have an easy answer to the question of suffering. For me, it's more about trying to be alongside people as they ask those questions and as they wrestle with them. And to point to the resources of things like the Bible. And, you know, people have been wrestling with these sorts of questions for centuries. So, you know, let's draw on those resources, but let's not think that there are easy answers to it all.
That is a huge, massive question that just keeps coming up. The issue of the problem of suffering. How could an all-loving, all-powerful God let this happen? How could he let people suffer? People keep raising that question. And like you say, there's no easy answer. And I don't think it's helpful to try and give an easy answer to that. I'm quite inspired by people that come up with strong arguments in response to it in a sort of philosophical context. But I do find that whenever people are asking that question, it's not because they want a logical or theological argument, because that doesn't really help. But I guess it's asked from a place of pain. So solving that question of where God is in suffering isn't necessarily the best way of going about it. But I guess it's something I've been mulling over is people are finding comfort in the recognition that, like, God understands our pain and is with us in it, that Jesus is a man of sorrows, as we see in Isaiah 53, that we're not alone. And that's huge. And I've seen other people kind of take it as a mandate to completely throw themselves into some kind of social action, acting as God's hands and feet in a broken world, which is huge as well. So I guess rather than trying to expect him to fix it all by some miracle, turning, like, why doesn't God sort it out into, well, what are we doing to sort it out? And then there's other people that are saying, I suppose, in response to that question, that there is growth and deep learning that can only come from suffering, like we see in James chapter 1 or other places. And I think these are all, like, profoundly helpful responses and definitely thought-provoking and worth considering. But I guess for me at the moment, when people raise this question in the context of the coronavirus situation, I just feel the need to say, let's talk about it. Let's try and verbalize the pain, the suffering. We're not very good at that. but when I think none of us are untouched by this, like I said earlier, when one part suffers, every part suffers with it. And we need to learn to lament together, to grieve deeply, to acknowledge the pain, not to brush it under the carpet and say it'll pass, which ultimately it will, but that's not a helpful answer. And I guess in our culture and church culture, to some extent, there seems to be this unspoken rule that people should put on a brave face and be cheerful all the time, to not make a fuss, to not bring people down. But I wonder whether that's one of the things that God wants to teach us in this time, is to let go of those masks, to sort of drop that and to learn to grieve together from separate houses, to learn to listen to each other more deeply, to make space for lament. And it's got me wondering what that might look like after lockdown, when we do come back together again physically, what it would look like if churches were to sort of pursue this when we can meet together and do church in a different way. I guess the default is to have a one-off memorial service and move on, but I'm hoping we don't do that. I'm hoping we do take something more from this.
Yeah, and this certainly is a challenge to a facile, sort of superficial triumphalism, isn't there? Now, we are Easter people, we are resurrection people, we are people with an eternal hope, but none of that minimises or negates the reality of suffering and the depth of experience that some people are going through. And in fact, next week's podcast, we'll be thinking about this question of suffering, an all-loving, all-powerful God. We will wrestle with some of the theological or philosophical answers that are sometimes put forward. But I hope that we'll do so all the way through, remembering that these are issues that deeply affect real people in the kind of sometimes very gritty realities of life. And we must never lose sight of that. We're coming right towards the end now. It's amazing how quickly half an hour can go. As I say, in next week's podcast, we will pick up that idea of God and suffering. Where's he in it, and lament and hope and all the rest of it? Because it's a chunky question in its own right. But a final question now. We're running out of time, so this goes out to all three of you. I wonder, can each of you give me a one-sentence answer? There's a challenge. And then the question is, when normal, in inverted commas, finally returns, how do you hope the church will be different as a result of this difficult season? Penny, can we start with you?
Okay, I hope there'll be a little bit less hierarchy and control, a little bit more creativity and connection. It's still the same sentence. And that we continue to go out of the way to include everyone, the people on the margins, those who are housebound and ill, so that they can join in with church just as much in the future as some of them can for the first time in years.
Thank you. Kat?
Gosh, how to summarise in one sentence. I love how the compassion and the gifts of people are coming out in the sense of helping one another out, and I'm sure that will continue. But I'm really hoping that churches will more intentionally make space when we can come together again to, like I said earlier, to look out for the voices that haven't been heard and to explore what those people's gifts are, what people's contribution can be to church. I love what Penny was saying about kind of, what was it, breaking down the hierarchy, something like that. That's a wonderful concept. And how can we really support the people that don't feel heard or don't feel worthy even to express themselves, to express their gifts, to offer what they have in the context of church and to look together at what's most meaningful to people.
Thank you. Bishop Martin.
Well, agree with everything that Penny and Kat have said. I guess, as you would expect me to say, though, my great hope, I suppose, is that we go deeper in our everyday faith. So the three aspects that we've talked about in the diocese, everyday prayer, everyday witness, everyday action. I think what this is showing us is taking us back to the fact that church is about every aspect of our lives, not just what we do in a building on a Sunday morning. So going deeper in our everyday faith.
Thank you. Well, we're pretty much at the end of this first episode. I hope you've enjoyed joining us. And here's the thing. We want our conversations, as we said at the beginning, to stimulate local conversations. So some of those things that we've just touched on this evening, just kind of landed on, why not take them further in your churches or small groups, fresh expressions, home groups, deaneries, or whatever? These questions might help you to take things further. Where have you been particularly aware of God over the last few weeks? How do you feel your relationship with God is changing through all of this? What's been good about doing church differently? What's been less good about doing church differently? And how do you hope to be different as a disciple when we come out of all of this? And how do you hope church will look different? Well, it's good to talk. It's good to reflect theologically. And we'll be back next week, where our topic will be, why does God allow suffering? Thank you to our panel today, to Penny, to Kat, and to Bishop Martin. And thank you to all of you for listening. So join us next week for our second podcast as we think out loud about God, ourselves, the church, and the world around us. God bless.